morning's reading is taken from the book of Hebrews, chapter 10, verses 28 through 31. Hebrews 10, 28 through 31. If anyone disregards Moses' law, he dies without mercy, based on the testimony of two or three witnesses. How much worse punishment do you think one will deserve who has trampled on the Son of God, regarded as profane the blood of the covenant by which he was sanctified, and insulted the Spirit of grace? We know the one who has said, "Vengeance belongs to me, I will repay," and again, "The Lord will judge his people." It is a terrifying thing to fall into the hands of the living God.
Sometimes the Bible teaches things by contrast. One example of this, of course, is in the passage just read, Hebrews 10, verse 31. If you look at this passage, you find an emphasis on the living God. Well, the word, of course, living did not need to be used, but it was used. And the stress there, the contrast there seems to be the living God in contrast to idols. We, of course, have nothing to fear from an idol. No matter how large an idol is, no matter what an idol is made out of, it cannot affect us. But the living God, Hebrews 10, verse 31, can affect us and will have a great impact on our lives. You may be familiar with this book. It was written by a man who lived back in the 1700s and 1800s. Jonathan Edwards wrote a book entitled Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God. One person who reviewed this book once made these comments. He said, quote, "I could almost hear the pin drop silence in the congregation." That is, this is as Edwards was preaching one of these sermons. He went on to say, as far as the congregation, and this was a small religious group up in the northeastern section of the United States, he said, "I could almost feel the sweat under the collars of the people." Third quote, "I could feel the stiffening of their backs as if axles had been driven through their spines." And then he said, as he reviews this particular book and sermon, he said, "Most all felt the panic of hell as Edwards hurled his words like hurricane winds." As you look at this particular sermon, it becomes fairly evident that as Edwards was preaching this to this small group of people, he was shaking his finger during the whole time. And as he presented this material, he assured, and this again was a very small assembly, he assured the people there that a high majority of the people in that group were going to perish. So he really had them on the edge of their seats. Well, I wasn't there, but certainly when we do think about falling into the hands of the living God, it is a frightening experience. And it's a bad thing for several reasons. First of all, falling into the hands of the living God, and that is unprepared, is bad because God is all-powerful. When punishment is administered in this life, it's often administered by people who have a certain amount of power or a limited amount of authority. Schools, of course, are limited in the amount of punishment that they can give. Employers are limited in their punishment of employees. But God is all-powerful, so to face him unprepared means big trouble. Falling into God's hands when we're not prepared to meet him is bad also because God is omniscient. That's a big word, which simply means that God is all-knowing. Sometimes people either avoid punishment, or they may receive a lesser amount of punishment because the person who is administering the punishment does not know all the facts, or maybe they did not know any of the facts. But God bases his judgment upon his knowledge of the facts, and that knowledge is complete. Not one thing escapes what he knows. Facing the wrath of God is horrible for a third reason, and that is God is eternal. If an employee is fired from the job, that company may be out of business next year. Or it may be that that circumstance only bothers the person for a few months. Long-term consequences do not always follow us in this life. But if we fall into the hands of an angry God, the consequences of that are unending. God is eternal, so he has the ability, and his will is to punish people for eternity. That is unending. It will last forever. Because of these and some other qualities, we have stern warnings in the Bible about meeting God in an unprepared state. There are a lot of different directions that this lesson could go, but I want to, for the balance of our time this morning, deal with nothing but Matthew chapter 24. As I think about the scriptures, Matthew 24, of course, the first part of that chapter deals with what the Jews faced regarding the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 AD. If you want to know what it's like to meet an angry God, at least in this life, Matthew 24 is a pretty good place to go. And if this is what people faced in this life as far as being in the hands of an angry God, then certainly it's almost beyond comprehension. as far as meeting God unprepared in the life after this one. Matthew 24, as you're turning there, you might begin by glancing at verse 1. The disciples of Jesus pointed to some of the structures in the first century, and apparently some very amazing structures. But Jesus responded with some words that must have astounded and shocked his special friends. Jesus said to his people, to the apostles, a time is coming. There will be a period that arrives when all the things that you see, all the things that seem so impressive now, Jesus said these items will be demolished. Jesus said the destruction that's going to come will be so complete, it will be so thorough, the building will be eradicated in such a way that not one stone will be left on top of one another. The disciples, as they heard that, it sounded just so amazing that they were thinking in terms of the world's end, verse 3. Well, Jesus, of course, at least primarily did not have in mind the end of the world. He was thinking about the destruction of Jerusalem, an historical act that's already taken place. It took place about 40 years from when these words were spoken. The Romans marched into Jerusalem, and they were mighty. Jerusalem, at that time, was destroyed in the very manner that Jesus had predicted, and God's people, or at least those who had been God's people, the Jews, faced judgment from an angry God. We get a very good picture of God's anger and wrath in Matthew 24. Let's start our reading with Matthew 24, verse 6. And Jesus, and again, related directly to the destruction of Jerusalem, said, "Ye shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that ye be not troubled, for these things must needs come to pass. But the end is not here yet." God has used wars in the past to judge people and to punish people, to destroy people. And he used a war in 70 AD. For us, a lot of what happens in war is sanitized. We have reports that are stripped of certain details. We don't always get to see the things that are real gory. News services oftentimes are prevented from showing certain pictures. Maybe the closest that we get to a war, a real war, is, or a real battlefield, is a movie. And filmmakers sometimes do a pretty good job. They have created films which are sometimes difficult to watch. Maybe you've seen a war picture where a soldier was pierced in some manner by a weapon or maybe a bomb and blood just shot from the body. Kind of hard to watch. Or maybe you've seen a war picture where as you looked at a person and there should have been an arm or there should have been a leg, there was just an empty space. And there are some other scenes that are simply too graphic to mention. But when the Jews fell into the hands of an angry God in 70 AD, Jesus said that one of the things that they would face would be the horrors of war. And we know that's bad. If war were the only consequence, it would not have been a good thing. But Jesus said that the disobedient Jews were going to experience something beyond the horror of conflict. Staying with Matthew 24 in the next verse now, verse 7. For Jesus said, "Nation shall rise against nation. Kingdom would rise against kingdom. And there shall be famines and earthquakes in divers places." Not too many of us have ever had to suffer through a famine. Perhaps the closest thing many in this country have ever gotten to as far as being similar to that was the Great Depression from several years ago. But there are people in the world. There are still a lot of people in today's world that literally go without food. We have people who die from starvation. And it's possible. We do not need to search very far. Either through TV or some other form of media, we can find it in some magazines, where we can see the pictures of people who are starving because they do not have sufficient nourishment. Starving is a horrible way to suffer. It's an awful thing. It's bad enough just to look at, let alone experience. And Jesus said when these people fell into the hands of an angry God, this would be one of their fates. If this were all that people face, that is war and starvation, it's bad. People might in that day and time have thought things cannot get much worse. But you know, there were worse things. Jesus said that earthquakes would befall people as well. So we have no food, we have battle upon battle, and now we have some natural disasters. So three disasters for the Jews in verses 6 and 7 as they faced an angry God. Well, at that time, people may have thought we're facing severe consequences. Things probably can't get much worse. Heavy punishment is being inflicted. But you know, as you look at the text, you find that the punishment at this stage, these three forms of judgment were actually quite light. War, being without food, and earthquakes were just the initial shocks. Look at verse 8. But Jesus said all these things, what things? Verses 6 and 7. They simply said they are the beginning of the travail. This is where it starts. This is where it begins. It's going to get a whole lot worse. So the Jews, as they fell into the hands of an angry God, they had been thinking, well, this is going to last for a little while, or maybe a long period of time, and then it's going to go away. And Jesus said, no, this is just introductory wrath. In verse 10 of Matthew 24, Jesus, of course, spoke of hate and betrayal. And then we have the information that's found in verse 12. And because iniquity or sin shall be multiplied, the love of the many shall wax or shall grow cold. Sin would be increased. Multiplied is the ASV translation. Sometimes I see people throughout the week who use three words. Just walk away. Sometimes problems need to be turned over to others. Sometimes things simply need to be left alone. In 70 AD, God basically walked away from the Jews, the people who had been his people for such a long time. He walked away, left them on their own, and things got really, really bad. Sin abounded, and Jesus is not specific about this. Perhaps it means that people were going to be more intense in their persecution of Christians, and also involved in this, it may be that sin in general began to wildly increase. When you look at places that have rioting going on, or there are wars, or there are famines, people generally get out of control. So part of God's punishment for the Jews was separating himself from the people who needed assistance in Jerusalem. Oh, God had helped them in the past. The people from previous years had cried out and God had responded with deliverers. But this time, heaven promised that it was going to be quiet. There would be no help when the Jews fell into the hands of an angry God. From verse 15, we find that when the Romans marched into town, they were going to desecrate the temple. When therefore ye see the abomination of desolation, which was spoken of through Daniel the prophet, standing in the holy place, let him that readeth understand. When people fell into the angry God, hands of the angry God, the religious structures, the building, the physical structures were going to be destroyed, but there was also going to be pain beyond that, and that was suffering. Verse 17. Let him that is on the housetop not go down and take out the things that are in his house. If we know a natural disaster is coming, it's common, it's typical for people to go back to their place of abode, to go back to their home and probably try to preserve some things. But Jesus said this judgment is going to be so sure, so swift, so certain, that when it comes, when you see the Romans coming into town, you do not go back to your house and you do not try to reclaim anything. Don't try to preserve anything. It's going to be so fast, it's going to be so furious. Jesus said, there's only one option for you folks, and that is you better run. You better flee, because when God comes to town through the Romans, it's going to be very, very destructive. Verse 16, too. Then let them that are in Judea flee unto the mountains. Because judgment was going to be so severe, Jesus said people needed to get away as fast as they could. There was no going back to the house. There was no going, well, let's just do a quick check of a few rooms and see what we can get or should take. But the picture is like a house that is emblazoned with fire. It's completely on fire. People need to get out of the house, get out of the area, because there is no other choice if life is going to be preserved. Perhaps to impress the thought even more, Jesus added the stirring words in verse 18. And let him that is in the field not turn back to take his cloak. Now relate that to verse 16. Jesus was talking about people who were going to head to the mountains. Now, I've never been over to that section of the world, but I would imagine that if you're in the mountainous area, you probably want to have some heavier clothing. You want to take something that's going to be suitable for a colder or cooler climate. But Jesus said, as he gave this warning, you don't want to do that. You don't want to go back and try to get an extra jacket out of the closet. You don't want to go back for any kind of cold weather gear. The judgment was going to be so brutal, so total, that Jesus said, don't go back for additional clothing. Then Jesus said in verse 19, falling into the hands of an angry God is going to be so awful that pregnant mothers are going to have a difficult time trying to flee the destruction. He said it would be so hard for people that they should pray that the judgment would not come upon the Sabbath. Because on the Sabbath, of course, the city gates would be closed and the people would be locked in. And then Jesus also said, as you're praying to get away, as you're praying that when the judgment comes, it will somehow be minimized a little bit for you, pray that it's not going to be in winter either. Because again, for us, we know how difficult that is. When things get cold, everything just moves a little slower. And then verse 22 offers this assessment. And except those days, that is, again, 70 AD, that time period when the Romans came against Jerusalem, except those days had been shortened, no flesh would have been saved. But for the elect's sake, that is, because there were going to be Christians in the area, those days, that period of time, was going to be shortened. It sounds like about 2,000 years ago, the destruction of Jerusalem was one of the world's worst experiences. And you know that's what Jesus says? Verse 21 of this same chapter. There Christ said, for then shall a tribulation be, a great tribulation, such hath not been from the beginning of the world, even until now, no nor ever shall be. Now, whether that's an exaggeration for the sake of emphasis or not, Jesus said it was going to be very, very bad. Well, what do we learn from Matthew 24 when it comes to drawing some conclusions about falling into the hands of the living God? We learn, first of all, that it is an awful experience for people, especially these people who had formerly been God's people. We learn, secondly, that we do not want to suffer this fate, that is, come face to face with an angry God. We learn that heaven warns people about taking a path which will lead them into the hands of an angry God. That's clear also from Matthew 24. Look at verse 25. Jesus said there, "Behold, I have told you beforehand." He didn't want his people to perish. But for the Jews, they're also being told. The gospel was being preached so the people would not only be children of God, but that they would have this information and be able to respond to it when the Romans came to town. We also find in Matthew chapter 24 that God keeps his word. Jesus spoke these words about 40 years before they happened, and that's a long time. 40 years is a long time to say something is going to happen 40 years from this year or from today. People are usually wrong. And certainly people are not nearly this precise. But Jesus said one of the world's worst disasters is going to hit in 4 decades. And he was exactly right. Every point that he made was correct. What the Jews faced was awful from every perspective. War, famine, earthquakes, being chased from homes, not being able to go back and get something as simple as a coat. And some died. Some of the Jewish people were surely able to start again after the Romans had gotten through. There surely were some people who were able to go back and sort of reform their lives. But you know, in eternity, there are no second chances. If after this life we enter into the hands of an angry God, there is no second chance. And if we perish in that manner, it's not going to be a kind of existence where, well, we just have to face something like a war. Or it's not going to be something as difficult as a famine or a natural disaster being chased from our home. It will be unending destruction. Jesus, in describing this, and this too comes from this chapter, verse 51, the final verse, talks about falling into the hands of an angry God at the end of time. And he says, "And shall cut him asunder, and appoint his portion with the hypocrites, there shall be the weeping and the gnashing of teeth." And he had in mind eternal destruction. In the next chapter, Matthew 25, verse 30, Jesus refers to this place as darkness for eternity. Imagine, if you will, living in light, or living without light forever and ever. Imagine crying and pain and weeping that never stops. Imagine pain that's so strong and so bitter that we grind our teeth without end. Those were some of the images that Jesus used to describe falling into the hands of an angry God. It's no wonder then that when we come to the book of Hebrews, chapter 10, verse 31, the inspired writer said, that's not a good thing. It's a fearful thing to fall into the hands of a living God. And yet that's going to be the fate for so many. It will be the fate for all who are not in a right relationship with God. God's full and God's consuming wrath will be directed at each person who is not in a saved state. So our greatest responsibility in life, our number one task, our number one goal needs to be to find out what God wants from my life and then to do it. Because if we fail in those regards, we will fall into the hands of an angry God. There is no other consequence. There is no other choice. That must be our fate if we do not right our relationship with God. Since we're here today, we have at least one more chance to do that. So as we think about what happened to the Jews almost 2,000 years ago, we want to ask ourselves some questions. When we face God, will we face hands of wrath or hands of love? Will we be greeted with a whip, or will we be greeted with those great words, "Welcome home, you're one of my children"? Will we be classified as a saint or a sinner? Those will not be arbitrary decisions, but for those who lived under the New Testament era and were accountable for their actions, it will be based upon whether or not we obey the gospel. 2 Thessalonians chapter 1, verses 7 through 9. Paul talked about Jesus coming back, rendering fire or punishment to those who know not God and to those who obey not the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ. He preached the same message that Jesus preached when Christ was talking about the destruction of Jerusalem, pain and suffering, separation from God, because people didn't do what was right. Don't have to fall into the hands of an angry God. Hope's available. Jesus came, he died so that you might be saved. And this morning, if you're not in the right relationship with him, why not? You have at least one more chance. If you're so close, you believe that God's word is true, you want to live as the Bible describes, and this morning you're ready to confess Christ as Lord, and you're ready to take that additional step too. Baptism into Christ's body for the forgiveness of your sins, you can do those two things. They're quick, they're easy, and you can know that you've done what heaven requires. If you have and you've drifted back from the right course, think what happened to those people in Matthew chapter 24, and that was just in life. That lot doesn't need to be yours. You still have, again, one more chance. And if that's a chance that you need to use, we invite you to come as we stand and sing the selected song.